That means just until permanent placement is found.
He probably has family, Connie. A dad, at least. Grandparents, aunties and uncles and cousins. If anything happened to Cal and Maggie, God forbid, I would raise Elizabeth.
You're probably right. The county will be looking. Meanwhile, he'll be safe with Rafe and Lisa. But it brought something to mind I want to talk to you about. I'm going to ask you a very hard question, but you can take your time on the answer.
You really know how to scare me, she said.
Oh, honey, don't ever be scared. Your answer is final with me. You know that. But here's what I want to know. Would you consider being a foster parent?
She was clearly flabbergasted.
Huh? I understand your worries about having children with me, primarily your father's mental illness in the gene pool. I'm not worried about it, but I leave that up to you. I don't want you to ever go against your best judgment to keep me happy. But foster care might be something we can do together. If you like being around kids, that is. I see you with Elizabeth, and you're so good with her. See, I'm already certified, and since I was single and working, I did what Rafe did. I was available for short-term coverage.
I didn't know that, she said. How could you be? You're not even married. Do they let single men be foster parents?
He nodded. And domestic partners, and young couples, and older couples, and all kinds of unique situations. There's a pretty serious evaluation process, but things like gender or sexual orientation are not disqualifiers. There are much more important considerations. They want to be assured of home safety, dependability, knowledge, and there's a background check. Then there are those home visits.
But you never had any foster kids.
Not in a while. But before we moved in together, I had a few temporary kids. The longest was 2 weeks until his relatives were located. The youngest was 4. What a pistol he was. Lisa helped out while I worked. I had a teenager once, a girl. That was the most complicated. I was obviously the only resort. They don't usually place a teenage girl with a bachelor, but she was out of options. It was me or juvenile detention. Lisa and Rafe went to bat for me and promised they'd be around daily, and they were. It was only a few days. They found her a good permanent foster home almost right away. She's doing great.
Oh, my God. I'm totally stunned, she said.
I'm sorry. I never thought of it. For no particular reason, the county hasn't called me or Rafe and Lisa in a year. Since we met, it hasn't come up.
Oh, God. Did it come up today?
He briefly hung his head. I had this little regret, seeing Rafe hanging around the hospital waiting to take the baby home. And I thought, why didn't I talk to Sierra about this? Because you love taking care of Elizabeth, and we both wish we could have kids around, but you don't think we should have them. And he's so... He's in good hands with Lisa and Rafe and their brood.
He's so what? She asked.
He's so vulnerable, Connie said. This makes no sense, but I asked myself, what if that was me? What if I had no parents? What if I lost everything in 1 second and my whole future depended on if a conscientious, reliable family took me in?
Oh my goodness, you're reeling me in. We're not even married.
We should probably do that one of these days, Sierra.
We will.
Okay, he said, because he never pushed her. Too much. Will you think about it?
Connie, why are you doing this?
Well, obviously I can't bring home a kid without you being on board. You live here. This is your home.
I mean, why are you a foster parent?
He sighed and raked his hands across his chest. You know, every now and then, there's a kid. Maybe he was pulled out of a bad home situation. Maybe there was a fire or accident. Maybe a kid was abandoned. About 10 years ago, a guy took his son into a diner and left him in the booth to go out to his car to get his wallet and never came back. A little kid. Who does something like that? Anyway, every once in a while, there's a kid who needs a place to stay. I just like to help out. Want me to put that lasagna in the microwave?
Let me do it, she said.
When Sierra first moved to Colorado a little over a year ago, she stayed in a little one-room cabin at Sullivan's Crossing. Sully had the coffee going by around 5 in the morning, and Sierra would join him in the general store for her early morning coffee. A few days a week, she'd go on to work at the diner in town. That coffee wasn't all that gave her a good start on the day. She was also fortified by her conversations with Sully. He had a way of zeroing in on her issues and making her think. Because of that, she'd occasionally still get up extra early and drive out to the crossing just to have coffee with him. She could see the light was on in the back of the store, so she parked back there and gave a couple of warning knocks before opening the unlocked door.
Morning, she said. You ever think about locking that door? I mean, it's dark as pitch, and you're here alone.
And didn't you just bring your best sunshine into the room,
Sully said. Molly rushed to him, wagging her tail madly.
And I suppose this freeloader wants breakfast too, he said,
bending to give her a robust rub.
If you wouldn't mind, Sierra said. I'm working today, so I'll swing by the house and drop her off on my way.
He poured her a cup of coffee.
Connie working?
He asked. He gets off in a few hours. He was on all night.
Sully, did you know Connie was a foster parent? I mean, a certified one?
I don't believe I did. I know he helps out with kids all the time. I knew he'd had a couple stay with him just because he was helping out. I didn't know he was any kind of official foster parent.
Rafe and Lisa take in foster kids short term. They have a 4-month-old baby at the moment. His mother died in a car accident.
That big one? Over on the freeway?
She nodded, sipping her coffee.
Connie wanted to bring him home, but he didn't want to do that to me. He asked me to think about signing up for that, to be a foster parent. I don't feel particularly qualified.
What would qualify you?
Sully asked.
Experience, for one thing.
He laughed.
Not very many regular parents start out with experience. I certainly didn't. I imagine they have a program, and probably a test.
He added with a chuckle. He waited for her to say something.
I suppose you're about to tell me why this bothers you.
It's personal, she said. I'd like it to be between us. I mean, I talk to Connie, but no one else. Do you still want to know?
I ain't gonna beg, but I don't usually find the need to talk about personal things. It's up to you.
Well, it's like this. I know Connie loves kids. He's always helping out with the kids when they come to tour the fire department. He takes them on hikes and helps them learn to rock climb. But I don't think it's a good idea for me to have kids because, well, you know, because of my dad. He's mentally ill. I worry about that gene running loose inside me. What if I pass it on?
There's any number of things you can pass on,
Sully said.
Not to mention all the things you might just end up with on account of fate or accident. Speaking of accidents, those happen all the time. You might have a perfect child and then lightning could strike him. But if it worries you, it's your right to play it safe. Is Connie giving you a hard time about it?
Oh, not at all, she said. He totally understands. And so he came up with a possible solution. Foster kids. But what if I fall in love with one and they have to move away?
Sully just looked at her.
You've been up all night trying to figure out all the bad things that could happen?
He asked her.
I did toss and turn. A lot, she admitted. It's just that there was something I didn't tell Connie.
Aw, now, don't be telling me secrets between a man and a woman,
he whined. I didn't tell him that I'd love to have kids more than anything. I've always wanted kids. I love Elizabeth so much, sometimes it aches in me. And I don't think I could have a child and live through something awful happening to him. And I don't think I can take care of a child, especially a baby, and give it up. But wouldn't it be selfish and wrong of me to have a child if there's a chance it could inherit a disease?
Lord above, girl. I didn't know you even knew how to think that much. You must be exhausted.
I am a little tired.
If I thought that much, I'd have to sleep for a month.
You must have had some thoughts about children when you were having Maggie.
The problem was it never once crossed my mind. One day, real early in my marriage, Phoebe said, "Congratulations, genius. You got me pregnant." From that moment on is when I thought about it. By the way, no one was a worse parent than I was. Ask Phoebe sometime. And look at Maggie now. I suspect there are special angels assigned to the children of terrible parents.
Drunks and children, Sierra said.
How's that?
As the saying goes, God takes care of drunks and children. Some would argue they're practically one and the same.
Sierra, you better talk to an expert about this, Sully said.
You mean like someone in genetic counseling? She asked.
I was thinking more along the lines of someone familiar with your alcohol disease. Because I think this might be a symptom. This thinking till you pass out.
She sighed. Of course you're right, she said. It's one of my character flaws. I tend to create these complex scenarios in which I'm the star. Not usually in a good way.
I'd say talk to your sponsor Moody, but if he ain't even more impatient than me...
Sully let Beau and Molly out the back door for a little run.
If you like kids, maybe you should try something that puts you in touch with them, but you can't keep them even if you want to. Here's what I think. 1 week working in a daycare should cure you of that notion.
There's a thought.
And here's another thought. You in this with Connie for real? Sully asked.
Oh, yes, she said. We're going to get married. We just haven't planned anything yet. There's been so much going on with Elizabeth coming and everything.
I doubt Elizabeth has been standing in your way. But if you're in this with Connie for the long haul, for the love of God, talk to him. Not some old man with a heart condition.
She smirked at him. Your heart is fine, she said.
But I am old, he argued.
No, Frank is old. You're just ornery. Sierra knew she could get like this sometimes, get obsessed about something and work it like a hangnail. This thing about kids was doing it to her. Or maybe she was doing it to the thing about kids. Why she felt a desperate need to come to a decision, a conclusion, she couldn't explain. But Sully was right. It was one of her issues. By 9 in the morning, the breakfast rush at the diner was nearly over. Connie stopped by on his way home. He sat at the counter.
Hi, babe. Will you buy me breakfast?
I will. What's it gonna be?
I want what you want me to want, he said.
She just smiled and shook her head. I am the luckiest woman alive. Today you should have the breakfast burrito. Then you should go home and sleep.
Last night wasn't bad. I got some sleep. I'm gonna swing by Rafe's and see how the little guy's doing. Then I'm going to check on Sully and see if he needs help today. Then a good nap. Can you decide on dinner? If you bring home the groceries for it, I'll cook.
You're going to see the baby? She asked.
I'm more going to see how Rafe and Lisa are doing. They might be in need of a nap themselves.
When she put his breakfast burrito in front of him, she said, Just be sure you rest, Connie. You're always thinking about everyone else. He gave her a flirty grin.
I think about you, that's for sure. And it doesn't make me feel like sleeping.
I have a feeling you're going to be like a frisky pup when you're 90, she teased.
That's my plan, he said, grinning.
Well, it's my plan too, so you better take care of yourself. Nap, Connie, and I can make dinner. When he'd finished his burrito, he put enough tip on the counter to cover its cost and make her smile. Then he kissed her goodbye and left, smiles all around the diner. Sierra knew she could have talked this situation over with Cal. In fact, she could have talked it over with Cal and Maggie. If she remembered correctly, Maggie was off today. There was always Lola, who would be working in the diner this afternoon. And Lola was so wise. She could call Moody, her AA sponsor, or just go to a meeting and bare her soul. But she did none of these things. Instead, when she was off work at about 2, she went to the Vada's house. She was relieved that Connie's truck was nowhere in sight. But there was a chance they were resting, so she gave the door a couple of light raps. Rafe opened the door.
Sierra, we weren't expecting you.
I know. Connie told me about the baby, and I thought I'd come by and see how you're doing. She lifted a takeout bag. I brought you a cheesecake and some cookies for the kids.
Oh, you shouldn't do that, Lisa said from behind her husband. She had a chubby baby wearing a onesie against her shoulder. I've been trying to lose the same 15 pounds for the last 5 years at least.
You always look wonderful, Sierra said.
That's what I tell her, Rafe said. But I'm a husband, which means she thinks I'm a liar. Or an idiot.
You're so sweet, Lisa said. How thoughtful.
I'm neither, Sierra said. I'm nosy. I want to meet this little angel. Lisa turned him around. He rubbed his little hands in his eyes. Then he looked at Sierra and gave her a large, toothless grin.
Oh,
Sierra said. Then he promptly threw up on his powder blue onesie.
Oh, no, Lisa said. Well, I guess we filled him up. I'm sorry,
Here, Sierra said, taking the baby and turning him so Lisa could mop his face in pajamas.
Oh, now you feel better, don't you?
Elizabeth usually makes sure she gets it on me, but only if I'm wearing something clean and fresh. I think I've smelled like cheese since she came into my life.
I'll get a new outfit, Rafe said, turning away from them.
He has a little issue. He doesn't exactly burp, Lisa said. But he's okay, isn't he? Sierra asked.
He's amazing, Lisa said.
We're watching him very closely, and even though he's 4 months, he's sleeping on a SIDS monitor, in our room. There are no apparent injuries. Thank God for that fantastic car seat. He's going back for another workup tomorrow.
What in the world happened?
I think she was texting, Rafe said, coming back into the room with a clean outfit, based on what the other involved driver said.
Sierra backed up to the couch, put the baby down, and began unfastening his pajamas, peeling them off like an old pro. And the baby giggled. There is no sound more invigorating than the helpless giggle of a baby. So Sierra started talking to him, in his language. He giggled all the harder. He laughed all the way through the changing of his clothes. Then she picked him up and cuddled him. She looked up at Rafe and Lisa.
Texting?
She was awfully young, Lisa said. Not that texting while driving is limited to the young. She was barely 20.
Oh my God, just a child herself.
Do you know any more about her? Was she married? Is there family?
The highway patrol is investigating, and they know where the baby is. I'm sure we'll hear something when there's something to hear.
Is there a chance he'll be traumatized from the accident? From what he saw and heard? Sierra asked. Lisa shook her head. I don't think so. He might be startled by loud noises or something, but any child would be.
There's no evidence to suggest he'll remember or understand, Rafe said. He's just a few months.
He feels so cuddly and sweet, Sierra said.
I think Connie so wanted to bring this little guy home. I didn't know until last night that Connie's part of the foster care program.
A lot of us are, Rafe said. Fortunately, we don't get that much business. This is the second time we've had a baby stay with us.
Connie asked if I'd think about going through their program so we could be involved if there's a need. But I don't know. She jiggled the baby and absently kissed his head. I'd be afraid to get attached.
Well, we do, Lisa said.
The kids don't get into foster care because they're looking for a vacation. They're in need of affection and stability. Sometimes they're in need of boundaries, a little discipline, love and patience and direction. There have been a couple we kept track of for a while. They weren't with us long enough to miss us too badly, but I felt pretty sure we gave them love and security while they were here.
She doesn't like to admit it, but she cries when they leave us, Rafe said.
Well, if you're invested enough to help them, then you're invested enough to hurt a little when it's time to give them up. But I always felt they were going to a good place, A safe and loving home, Lisa said. Doesn't it get a little crowded? Sierra asked. Their house was very comfortable, but small. They both laughed. Oh, yes, Lisa said. Then she sat down on the sofa beside Sierra, and they visited for a while. Even though Rafe was Connie's closest friend and they'd socialized as couples, Sierra was learning things about Lisa for the first time. They'd married young and had their first child right away, but the second pregnancy was very slow to come. No logical reason why. Then two in a row, bam! It was between the first and second that Lisa and Rafe got interested in foster care. Once in the program, they just couldn't say no to a child in need of a home. Lisa was a nurse who went to a part-time schedule when their family grew. She worked in a doctor's office, which really came in handy with three kids and the occasional extra. With Rafe's schedule and time off, she was able to work about 20 hours a week. Their dream was a large plot of land, something like what Connie had built his house on. The kids need a dog and maybe a couple of horses, and I need a vegetable garden. Have you ever seen Sully's garden? Sierra asked. It's like a small farm, and he's passionate about it. Lately, he's needed a little help, but he resists. If you ever want to see it, just let me know. I'd love to, she said.
Babe, I'm going to start dinner, Rafe said from the kitchen.
Oh my God, is it dinner time? I have to get groceries and get home, Sierra said.
Don't panic, Lisa said with a laugh. Our dinners get earlier and earlier. Pretty soon there'll be late lunches. But with three kids to get ready for bed, oops, make that four. We're so anxious for bedtime to finally come, it's just ridiculous. Plus Sarah, our 8-year-old, has homework every night, if you can believe it. Lisa put out her hands. You're going to have to give him up if you plan to go shopping.
He feels like an appendage, she said. He's sound asleep. Should I put him down?
Nah, he could do with extra holding. He might not realize it, but he's been through a lot.
Sierra left the Vadas home feeling refreshed. New. She loved their life in their too small house with too many kids. Of course, Sierra wasn't completely convinced. She didn't think she'd have a brood. A couple might be nice. A garden. She'd have started one if it wasn't for Sully's. She liked seeing the elk in the yard some mornings, or blocking the road. It was such a nice day, no rain for a change, that she bought hamburger and buns. Too early for corn. She got some zucchini, an onion, mushrooms, and new potatoes to put on the grill. And when she walked in, she found Connie with his cell phone in his hand, watching the door. The house was tidy. There were vacuum cleaner tracks on the carpet, and the kitchen was spotless.
I was just gonna text you, he said.
She put her grocery sacks on the counter and then put her arms around Connie. We've been lazy, she said. We have to decide on details about a wedding and get married. This is silly. We want to, and our families are getting edgy. Do you think they're afraid we're going to split if we're not official? His big hand circled her waist.
It's already official for me, but I'm off tomorrow if you feel like getting a license.
He gave her a look.
What happened to get you in a hurry?
I'm ready, she said. I want us to be a family. I'm not sure what kind of family. I'll look into that foster care program, but I'm not sure that's where we're going. Let's start with me and you. I'm very sure of that. I have learned that to be with those I like is enough. Walt Whitman. Chapter 7. Sid had a real soft spot for rich chocolate cake and vanilla ice cream. And maybe a little extra whipped cream. And it appeared she was growing a soft spot for Dakota. He'd logged on 4 weeks at the soup kitchen, including one Saturday night that Sid didn't go. That meant 3 Saturday nights of cake, ice cream, and conversation with Sid. On her Saturday night off, she had taken the boys to a concert. Some band they were into. But she had to stay away from them and their friends, so it didn't really appear they were chaperoned.
But was it fun?
He asked. Sorry, what? She put her hand behind her ear as if she were deaf.
Never mind,
he laughed. Listen, Sid, I've invested 4 Saturday nights, many huge slices of chocolate cake, a dozen beers and burgers, and that's just in the last month. And you haven't given me any indication I'm making progress. What kind of progress? She asked, licking her fork.
There's no agenda, Sid. I like you and you like me. Most people would be wrestling like crazy lovers do.
And you think that's what I'm looking for because... He leaned toward her.
You're an adult woman in her 30s.
I told you, I don't date.
Yes, you do. You dragged me to a soup kitchen. It was a lure. To earn you, I had to display my charitable side, but I screwed up your plan. I like the place. And this is a date. Not much of one, but a date. Last week after cleanup, while you were going deaf, I had coffee and cake with Sister Mary Jacob. In fact, I'm thinking I might be more successful if I put the moves on her.
Sid laughed.
Something has come up, he said. My sister has decided it's time to get married. Sierra and Connie, they've been together about a year, lived together almost as long, and they're finally doing it. It's going to be small, very small. Family and close friends. No big event, but a nice small party. Be my date.
Really? You need a date?
Sid, you know Sierra, your friends. You know Connie and Sully and a couple of the firefighters who will be there. I hear Connie's mom and brother will come. Be my date.
What's the price of admission? She asked with a half smile.
There's no price, he said. I might lose my mind and beg sometimes, but you will always be completely safe with me. Always. I won't even hold your hand without permission.
I don't know whether to be flattered by your restraint or disappointed that I haven't made you lose your mind yet. He looked at her for a long moment.
Mary Jacob was a more accommodating date.
What did you two talk about? She asked.
Well, the homeless situation. And then she asked me for money or to find people who had money. Then she talked about some of the volunteers she knows. I asked her what she did for fun, and she said she was doing it. She's not a martyr, you know. She's doing exactly what she'd be doing if she weren't a nun. In fact, she's only a nun because at this point she can't come up with a reason to give it up. There were some priests, cardinals, and popes who she prayed on a long time, apparently to no effect. Her words. She's basically a tough old broad.
I know, Sid said. I love her. Not Mother Teresa, for sure. She's more like Ma Kettle. He smiled around a forkful of cake.
You're not old enough to remember Ma and Pa Kettle.
Neither are you. You know who would play Mary Jacob in the movie? Shirley MacLaine, except for the red hair. Mary Jacob is a big woman. Would you have taken her to the wedding?
I would, except she'd be working the crowd for donations.
Well, you didn't give her money, did you? She asked.
Of course I gave her money, he said. She was staring at me over that coffee cup, those bushy brows moving around, expressing her innermost thoughts.
You should think it through, Sid said. It's a very worthy cause, but you can't fund it. You work hard for your money.
I know. I'm not going to, but I'm going to hit up some people I know, and I bet there are other ways to get her what she needs. Sid, it's been a long time since I was forced to do something I didn't want to do, and I learned a lesson.
When was the last time? She asked. Just out of curiosity.
Hell, what can it hurt? In the army, I refused a direct order and got in a ton of trouble.
What's a ton of trouble in the army?
Jail,
he said.
Or, as we so affectionately called it, the brig. But I was determined in the moment that I had to do it. It didn't look great in my file, but I think I'd do it again.
That was very brave of you, she said.
People do it all the time. Go to jail for what they believe in. Journalists do it. Protesters do it. I bet you $100 Mary Jacob has been arrested.
Then he grinned.
Tell me about the boys. Tell me about your brother. Tell me again why you don't have a boyfriend.
So she told him about her nephews and her brother. Just brief sketches. But he was very interested. He reciprocated by telling her things she didn't already know about Cal and Sierra. But then she asked the question he knew would come eventually. Will your parents be at the wedding?
I don't think Sierra will invite them. My father suffers from dementia of sorts. Not Alzheimer's, but he's easily confused, and travel with him would be a nightmare. It's supposed to be a happy occasion, after all.
Why are they having the wedding now? She asked.
I think it's a time thing, as in they don't have that much of it. And gathering what there is of our family isn't easy. Maggie has her practice in Denver. Cal has a practice here. When the crossing is full of campers, it's hard for Sully to close up shop. And in summer, Connie has both a fire department and search and rescue duty. And they've decided to become foster parents.
Sid's eyes popped up from her plate. They were round and startled.
Huh? Yeah, some of their couple friends do that, and I guess Connie has been through the certification program. Friends they sometimes hang out with have had foster kids, and Sierra thinks it's a good idea. I've seen her with Cal's little girl. They're both great with kids.
Wow, she said. You make it seem like the whole family is virtuous.
It's a trick, Sid, he said. You'll fall in love with me because I gave Sister Mary Jacob $100.
She made a sound with her lips. Not for $100, I won't. When he walked her to her car, he grabbed her hand and she allowed it. When they were beside her car, he swung her around and pulled her against him, closely against him. She looked up at him.
You said I would always be safe with you, Sid said quietly.
Try to get away, he said.
She pulled back and was instantly free.
I'm not taking hostages, Sid.
Without warning, she flung herself against him, into his arms, dug her fingers into the thick hair at the back of his head, and smothered him in a kiss so sweet he was breathless. For a second, shock kept him from reacting. Then he circled her waist with his arms and held her, moving over her mouth with passion and urgency. The taste of her, more chocolate than anything, turned him on and blew his mind. If there had been a private room nearby, maybe she wouldn't have been all that safe, and neither would he.
Whoa, he said, tightening his arms. You are definitely worth waiting for.
I think you're manipulating me, she whispered against his lips.
I wouldn't even know how, he said, kissing her again.
And again, that kiss was hot and crazy. He really wanted her, and yet this was not the time or place.
We're in a parking lot, he said. We have three choices. We can climb in my truck and make out, we can go somewhere and be alone, or we can table this for a while.
She relaxed in his arms. I'm taking door number three, under the circumstances.
I have my own place.
My brother is probably expecting me.
I still have my own place, he said.
It'll keep. She gave his cheek a pat. I'll go to the wedding with you, but only so you don't have to be embarrassed by having a nun for a date.
Okay,
he said hoarsely.
Can I at least have your phone number now?
Sid was a little dreamy while driving home. She was having a conversation with herself, aloud. She'd been doing this since grade school. Eventually, she was overheard, especially in the computer lab, and learned she wasn't the only person who did that. She'd ask and answer the questions as they came, usually mathematical or theoretical, but ultimately questions in every category. It was how she worked things out.
What do you think you're doing, Sydney?
She was hooking up. But she wasn't good at hookups. She hadn't had very many, and the one she did have turned into a husband, a very bad husband.
She wasn't about to let that happen again. She wasn't crazy. That looked a little crazy out there in the parking lot, spread on him like butter on bread. But she couldn't help herself. She liked him. Did she ever like David in that way? She couldn't remember. She'd asked herself 100 times, was her heart broken because she loved him so much or because he'd betrayed her in so many ways? In the beginning, before they were married, she was very taken with him. He was sweet and attentive. There was her father's death, and David really hung in there. He went to the funeral, and then didn't he have finals? Or midterms? Or whatever it was? It was so critical. Everything was so critical. But she had signed on for it. She thought that's what people did for each other. He kept saying, I'm not doing this for me, Sydney. I'm doing this for us. There was never any us. She gave him 7 years. She supported him for 7 years, but she was doing exactly what she wanted to be doing. Was that the problem? The weak link? That she was so involved in her work? I hate to break it to you, but he could have started being unfaithful before you were married, and how would you know? Her inner voice asked. Did you ever once check? Oh, God. I can never be in a relationship again because I can't be one of those women who reads his texts in the dark of night or follows him to see if he's really going back to work. Then the idea of a garbage collector makes perfect sense. But he's not really a garbage collector. Well, he really is, but that doesn't mean anything at all. It's his job, not his identity. Was that where she'd gone wrong with David? Putting too much importance on the importance he put on himself? Didn't her degrees take as much dedication and time and intelligence? She was a scholar, a scientist. He said she was dull, boring. That was name-calling. It was true. Sid took a deep, calming breath. There were 3 things that decimated her about her failed marriage. That David had lied to her for so long and she'd been clueless. That she suddenly realized that not only was she completely alone, she'd been completely alone all along. And 3rd, there wasn't much about her to be attracted to. She was boring. A completely boring computer nerd. That she was a computer nerd on the cutting edge of cyber science, information technology, and artificial intelligence didn't make her a more interesting person. If she and David went out with his friends, doctors who could accomplish complex surgeries and save lives, doctors who would cure diseases, they would invariably ask her, "Listen, I'm having this problem with my operating system." Or, "I don't think I have a good cloud coverage setup." Yes, it had all been quite painful, to never feel a part of his life or even her own life. But things weren't exactly like that now. Right now, she was connected. It had been like training for a race. She came out of her quiet, preoccupied, serious place and learned to be more outgoing. She liked people after all. Anyone who had engaged in a long and complex course of study could tell you about how easy it is to become hyper-focused. She'd had to learn the first way in order to excel in math and then computers. So she had to likewise learn the more extroverted way. Getting out of her head a little and appreciating her enhanced social skills. A few months with Rob and she hadn't been lonely anymore. A few months behind the bar as a bartender and server, and it brought such a relief to feel that people actually liked her. Of course, she felt they didn't know the real her, the boring, fixated, dorky person she had left resting inside. But there was no denying, she still grieved the loss of her science. When she was making great strides in the lab, experiencing breakthroughs and making discoveries that could change the world, she felt huge. Inside, of course, but huge and important and confident. With her meltdown, she lost all that. She wished she hadn't let it happen, but she wouldn't know how to stop all the side effects of her personal crisis. Yes, even the most pragmatic scientist is vulnerable to emotional calamity. She fled to Rob to rebuild herself from the ground up.
Then Dakota came along, and she felt an instant sing of energy. Well, she must have been ready. She was a woman, after all. She hadn't stopped producing hormones. There was a certain biological science to it, wasn't there? There were lots of theories about why a certain man appealed to a certain woman, about what made all manner of creatures desire the opposite sex. With whales, the males wanted the strongest, fittest females because reproduction was difficult, and many cows died giving birth, which made perfect sense to Sid, considering the calf weighed about 600 pounds. But the whales didn't just mate with the most available female. And so it was with men and women, she assumed. The right one at the right time with all the right biological configurations from looks to scent to prowess. Whatever the magic was, Sydney went to bed thinking she'd grow old in her brother's house playing Auntie Sid, and woke up one morning finding herself wickedly attracted to Dakota Jones. It was going to be complicated. Ever since the night his tire had been slashed, Dakota had been parking in a more public place on the street when he went to the bar for dinner. He risked running into Alyssa, but he wasn't about to sacrifice any more of his Jeep SUV to the manic charms of Miss Neely. And sure enough, Alyssa was sweeping the sidewalk in front of the beauty shop as he walked up. She stopped and leaned on her broom. He thought briefly of crossing the street, but that would be just plain cruel. He walked right up to her, smiling.
"Hi there, Alyssa," he said. "Getting ready to close?"
"I have one more client. You can come to the shop for a trim if you like. I think I've gotten the message."
"Hmm? What's that?"
"You're all trimmed up, but I haven't seen you." "I get it. You found another place to get your hair cut. So I tried letting you know that I'm available to date if you're interested, but you ran for your life. It wasn't really necessary to hide your car to keep me from bumping into you at the bar."
"I think you have the wrong impression," he said. "I don't believe I ran for my life. I got a job. And I don't think I hid my car. I'm not parking behind the business anymore, that's for sure. I had some damage one night. I'm sticking to streetlights."
"Damage? In Timberlake?" she asked, surprised.
"It's all right, I took care of it. Are there lights where you park?"
"Just over the back door, but we've never had a problem." "So you weren't avoiding me?"
"Not at all. Just going about my business."
"Ha, that's a relief," she said, smiling. "I thought you'd made up your mind about me before even getting to know me. In that case..."
"Alyssa, I'm not available," he said. "I'm seeing someone. If you're looking for a guy who's available, it's just not me. I hope I didn't mislead you."
"But you just got to town."
"A couple of months ago," he said. "Plenty of time to meet someone."
"Well, for God's sake, who? In Timberlake?" He couldn't help but laugh.
"I guess the possibilities are pretty slim, aren't they?"
"So? Who?"
"Come on," he said with a laugh. "It's just friendly. But I'm trying to turn the heat up. The point is, my interest is somewhere else, and it wouldn't be nice of me not to tell you that."
"I thought you heard something." Her voice dwindled off, and she looked at him nervously.
"What did you think I'd heard?"
he asked. "Nothing," she said. "A couple of years ago, there was some nasty gossip about me. That's hard in a small town." Dakota frowned. He assumed it was the usual sexual innuendo. Maybe some of those Vegas trips with the girls got caught on an iPhone when they were compromised. Women really took a hit for all the same things that tended to make men look like studs. He was instantly sympathetic.
"I'm sorry, Alyssa. No, I didn't hear anything. But gossip isn't likely to affect me anyway. You seem like a real nice girl, but I have something going on."
"But with who?" she tried again.
"Give a guy a break, would you?" he said, laughing. "I need a little room to work my charm."
"Is that so?" she said, not particularly amused.
Hey, I'm sorry you're upset with me. We're neighbors now. No reason to be pissy.
I'm not, she said, but definitely was.
I'm gonna go grab dinner, he said. I'm hungry. I'll see you around. Take care.
He started to walk away, then he turned back to her.
Oh, I've been getting my trims at the barbershop. The only reason I came into your shop the first time is they were closed. I'm really not avoiding you.
He walked another half block, and just before he could cross the street, he was stopped by a woman's voice calling his name from the darkness.
Dakota.
He stopped, and Neely stepped out onto the sidewalk from the storefront where she'd been caught in the shadows. It wasn't yet dark, but the sun was setting and the shadows were long.
Is there a full moon or something? He wondered.
First Alyssa and then Neely? He put his hands in his pockets and looked at her, frowning.
I guess you're still upset with me, she said.
I know, I was aggressive. It's not typical, I promise.
But you're not typical either, Dakota.
You don't give me any encouragement at all.
And I suppose that made you angry, he said, scowling a little.
Nah, just disappointed. I want to apologize.
And maybe offer up $70 for the toe and $200 for the new tire? One was slashed, the rest were just deflated.
She frowned and shook her head.
What are you talking about?
My tire was slashed, Neely.
She gasped.
You can't imagine I would do something like that.
It was a pretty strange encounter we had. When I got back to my car, that's what I found. No other cars back there were damaged, and I had rejected you.
You think I'd damage your car because you didn't take me up on my very slutty offer? Listen, I'm embarrassed, but I'm not a vandal. I wouldn't do that.
But you would lure a guy into a dark alley.
Stop, she said, holding up a hand. It was impulsive and stupid and regrettable, but I backed right off when you made yourself clear. I was humiliated and couldn't even think of showing my face around here for about a month.
Why should I believe you? He asked.
You can check and see if I've any kind of record, I suppose, which I don't. But I swear to you, I'm not that kind of person. I'd never hurt a fly.
He just continued to stare at her.
Well, I've certainly learned my lesson, Dakota. And I'm sorry about the tires, but I can't imagine who would do that. You have someone pissed off at you?
Besides you? No one I can think of. And I did call the police.
They never contacted me. I suppose you told them.
Of course.
She ran a hand straight up her forehead, combing her hair with her fingers.
Oh, dear God. It's been such a long time since I was this stupid.
Let's call it done, Dakota said. I don't have proof, but it was a reasonable assumption.
Can we start over? She asked.
No, he said, shaking his head. I'm not going to just forget the experience that quickly. But what we can do is move on.
We'll be friends? She asked.
I don't think so, but we'll behave ourselves.
Certainly, she said. And then suddenly her face fell. Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, Dakota. Her eyes were large and childlike. What if... Oh, God. There's this guy. A man I was seeing for a very short period of time. He was intense and a little off, and I stopped seeing him almost immediately. I think we went out a few times in a couple of weeks, and he was ready to take ownership. I had to block his calls, block his emails, and I did see him hanging suspiciously close to my usual haunts.
Stalking you? Dakota asked.
Almost, but not quite. I talked to a friend who's a police officer, and the guy hadn't done anything scary or threatening, and I couldn't get a restraining order. My friend said I was doing the right thing, staying alert and staying away. He never crossed the line, never damaged my car, broke into my house, or tried to corner me or anything. But what if he...
Dakota just waited, frowning. She took a deep breath. What if he was following me and saw us together and retaliated against you?
I think you better talk to the police in Timberlake, he said. Tell them about the possibility.
I don't want to make trouble for him if he's innocent. That might come back on me. Stir him up, you know?
Well, someone isn't innocent, Neely. I had some significant damage to my car. So will you do that for me? Tell the police of this possibility before it happens again or gets worse?
Sure, she said. Oh, God, I'm so sorry, Dakota. Please say you'll accept my apology. He gave her a single nod.
No more tricks, Neely.
He added sternly. She put up her hands. Of course not. I was just going to grab a chicken Caesar. He gave her a forced smile.
Then I have an appointment, he said, not even bothering to conceal his irritation.
Oh, for God's sake, I'll sit at a table or booth as far away as I can get.
I'm going to have dinner at the diner tonight, he said. Take care.
He turned and walked down the street. Though it was tempting, he did not look over his shoulder. He went to the diner and found Lola was behind the counter.
Hey,
he said.
I don't see much of you here.
2 afternoons a week. It's not for the money, I assure you. On my diner nights, I can feed the boys here. She indicated 2 young men in a booth by the window. On nights Trace works at the bar and grill, he usually gets a burger. But the only time he gets vegetables is when I give him dinner. Cole is a little harder to feed. He's 19.
I guess I didn't know Trace was your son, Dakota said. I eat at the bar a couple of times a week. I see him all the time. Good-looking kids, Lola.
Yeah, they're gorgeous, she said. But they're all so good, I think. So, what can I get you?
Just coffee. And I'll look at a menu, but it would break Sid's heart if I let someone else feed me.
Sid? She asked, lifting eyebrows. You and Sid?
Well, maybe you shouldn't say anything like that since she hasn't agreed to go out with me yet. But that hasn't stopped me from asking a lot.
I love Sid, she said, grabbing a cup and pouring coffee. She's a sharpie, that one. She's helping Trace with physics. Dakota was taken aback.
Wow, bartenders are better educated than I thought, he said.
Lola laughed. She said she took a lot of math courses in college, and she kind of wanted to see if she remembered any of it.
Huh,
he said, impressed. She remembers, apparently, Lola said. Excuse me. She turned and went to check on the boys. Dakota took out his cell phone and made use of that phone number he'd recently scored.
I know Neely went in the bar. Will you text me when she leaves and the coast is clear?
He sipped his coffee. A minute later, he had a return text. Yes, you're pathetic. Family connections were always worth preserving. Good company always worth seeking. Jane Austen. Chapter 8. Dakota took his usual seat at the bar. Sydney gave the space in front of him a wipe, and she was grinning. Have you been hiding in your car? Slink down in the seat so no one would see you?
No. I went to the diner and had coffee with Lola. I thought about having my dinner there, but I know how much you like watching me eat.
It is a particular thrill, she said. Aren't you being a little ridiculous? Can't you keep the women at bay?
I had a doubleheader tonight. First, Alyssa caught me on the sidewalk and she wanted a little showdown. Apparently she's been worried that I was avoiding her because of some gossip I might have heard. I didn't hear any. I told her I'm seeing someone.
Who? Sid asked, putting his beer in front of him.
You wouldn't know her, he said,
lifting his mug and taking a big sip.
Ah, he said. Then, after I got away from Alyssa, I ran into Neely a little down the block. Call me crazy, but I think she was lurking, hiding in the darkness. I didn't see her, then she popped out of thin air. She said she wanted to apologize for her aggressiveness and she wanted to start over. I can't think of a scarier thought. There's something about her.
She came up with this story that some guy she barely dated was practically stalking her, and he might have been the one to...
Dakota cleared his throat.
You're hiding something, Sid said.
Can I have a Juicy Lucy, please?
He asked nicely.
Yes, when you tell me what you're hiding.
Why do you care?
I might have to rethink this wedding date if you're sketchy.
I'm not the sketchy one, he insisted.
He looked at her. She had one hand on her hip and a stern expression that said she